The Raw Deal Podcast contains language not suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Bullet Club for life.
What's up out there, ladies and gentlemen? It is 2016, a brand new day, a brand new year, and we're back here on the Raw Deal Podcast. I'm the host, Frank D, but I'm not alone. I got my tag team partner, Mr. Atlee Green. What's going on, big man?
Oh, happy new year, Frank D. It's a new year, 2016, and we have a lot of news to talk about.
We definitely do have a lot of news to talk about. So much stuff happening right now in the world of professional wrestling. We're going to be talking about the New Japan 4 that are possibly going to WWE. We're going to talk about John Cena going out with an injury and what his plans were for WrestleMania 32. Man, we got so much to get into today. But before we do that, Abby, go ahead and plug your social media.
You guys can hit me up on Twitter. Follow me at Atlee Green. And if you want to see me blogging about wrestling and other things, check out thegreenscreen.net.
Absolutely, and check out Gurick.net today for your pro wrestling news since 1997. And speaking of Gurick.net, Adley, let's go right now to the Gurick.net 2015 year-end awards. You have that information, so let the listeners know what's up.
All right, as if people that go to Gurick.net know, every year we have the year-end awards, and as of right now, all of the awards have been posted except for Wrestler of the Year. Wrestler of the Year is still, you can still vote on it right now, so definitely head over to Gurick.net and vote on who you feel is Wrestler of the Year. But the other awards have been announced. I'm going to start from the bottom and go up top here. Worst pay-per-view of the year was voted as Survivor Series this past year with 27% of the votes. So I personally felt that the Triple Mania was the worst pay-per-view because of all the technical difficulties, the crappy matches, but not a lot of people saw that show, so I can understand why it didn't win. But Survivor Series, as you and I, Frank D, we talked about, you know, even though they celebrated the Dead Man's 25th anniversary, it didn't feel special.
It missed so many opportunities with that show. I mean, it was a, you remember, Adley, it was the threat of ISIS and all that bullshit. And then they could have booked Undertaker strong. They could have, you know, had him change his look for one night. He could have went retro Undertaker. And they just failed on so many levels. And it was a bad night.
Pay-per-view of the year went to Wrestle Kingdom 9, which happened on January 4th, 2015. That show was amazing from top to bottom. And it actually had the match of the year on that show, which we'll talk about, which is pretty funny considering it was only the first four days of the year. And also, this was the first time Wrestle Kingdom and New Japan Pro Wrestling were airing on American pay-per-view because they had the whole deal with Jeff Jarrett and Global Force Wrestling. Didn't happen this year, but it happened last year. And Brooke, and actually, I want to talk about what came in second place with 26% of the vote was NXT TakeOver Brooklyn. Even though I still think Wrestle Kingdom was the show of the year, deservedly so, I really thought NXT Brooklyn was going to win this vote because everybody was on such a high after that show, especially with the Sasha Banks-Bailey match.
I think that the Sasha Banks-Bailey match is what made it pay-per-view of the year. And honestly, it was that match because, I mean, the show itself was so-so, but the show was different because it was in Brooklyn and it was in the Barclays Center, and that's what made it unique, you know? And it was that match, and then the curtain call, quote-unquote, at the end there. That's what made it differentiate from every other show we saw this year.
I mean, the other thing I want to bring out about pay-per-view of the year, the only, even though NXT is WWE and whatnot, the only WWE-branded show that was actually even voted on for pay-per-view of the year was WrestleMania 31 with 20% of the votes. So you have Wrestle Kingdom at number one, NXT TakeOver Brooklyn at two, WrestleMania 31 number three, then that's it. The rest is just NXT, Ring of Honor, Bound for Glory, TakeOver, Ring of Honor, New Japan. So, you know, it's kind of like the internet's really putting out there that WWE is really just not where it's at right now, besides all the news happening. But it's kind of funny how WWE can do such amazing things with their NXT brand, but the WWE brand's kind of lacking.
Well, we got to look at who's in charge of that NXT brand down there. That Triple H and a couple other people that helped book that show. You look at Raw and SmackDown and the main pay-per-views, that's a whole conglomerate up there, a whole corporation. So I think that's what the problem is. I think the problem is really at the head, and it's Vince McMahon, it's Kevin Dunn, and I think it's Stephanie. If Stephanie is still, you know, vice president of creative, it's her. Because let's be honest about it. Ever since Stephanie took over creative in 2001, I believe, it's been a steady decline since then.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I could not agree more. Switching to Jabroni of the Year, the winner of Jabroni of the Year was WWE Creative with 32% of the vote, coming in second place, Vince McMahon at 21% of the vote, and Hulk Hogan in third place with 19% of the vote. I actually thought Hogan would be higher than Vince, but I definitely feel WWE Creative definitely deserves the title of Jabroni of the Year, considering how Raw has been an absolute chore to watch.
No, I think that Vince McMahon should have been Jabroni of the Year because Vince McMahon controls the whole damn thing. They're only writing what Vince McMahon wants them to write. Vince McMahon has to be the one there to approve the scripts. So, I mean, in my opinion, Vince McMahon's the Jabroni of the Year, followed up by Hulk Hogan, but that's a different story, you know. Already got into the Hogan thing. I mean, it's time to move on from that, you know what I mean, brother?
Oh, of course. Angle of the Year was Seth Rollins cashing in the Money in the Bank briefcase at WrestleMania and winning the WWE World Heavyweight title at a whopping 45% of the vote. Some of the other angles that got here was Goldberg, Spears, Steiner, Scott Steiner, the Legend of Wrestling events, Undertaker attacks Brock Lesnar at Battleground with 10%, the start of the Divas Revolution, look at all these topics, you know, Liger appearing at NXT, Finn Balor, Davey's the Demon, Jeff Jarrett's return to TNA, which I thought would be a little bit higher. I think when I look at all these moments, Seth Rollins cashing in at Money Bank was definitely the moment that really got me excited, made me go, holy crap, this just happened.
Yeah, they needed something big for WrestleMania last year, and we got that. I mean, but you got to look at the card up and down. You know, you had Sting on there debuting for WWE the first time ever. So it was a magical night, and that match, you know, capped it off, and Seth Rollins cashing in Money in the Bank. I mean, we pretty much knew it was going to happen either at WrestleMania or the night after. So to see it happen at Mania, that was a pretty cool moment.
Moving on to Story of the Year, the passing of Pero Aguayo Jr. During a match in Mexico received Story of the Year at 33%. And, you know, honestly, this was just a sad year for professional wrestling with so many, you know, people passing away. You know, death of Roddy Piper and Dusty Rhodes came in second place at 28%. Sasha Banks and Bayley main eventing NXT TakeOver was at 12%, you know, but still, I mean, this was a sad year from all the legends and big names we lost. And then Pero Aguayo passing away in the ring. There's just a sad moment. It was very somber. It kind of makes you think twice, like, you know, for those who participate in professional wrestling, because it was such a freak accident, you know. And you couldn't even, like, really tell what happened at first. And, you know, my heart definitely goes out to the Aguayo family. But definitely a sad year for wrestling.
Absolutely. I mean, and they were, you know, dropping one after the other. I mean, first it was Pero Aguayo. And then we also have to remember too, you know, we lost Dusty Rhodes, Roddy Piper, we lost Buddy Landell and a bunch of other people. So yeah, you know, I agree with you. It was a very, you know, bad year for the business, not only as far as deaths go, but as far as, you know, creative as well.
I mean, Nick Bockwinkel in there as well. I mean, it's just a sad year, and I just hope that trend doesn't continue. But moving on to Tag Team of the Year, Ring of Honor's Red Dragon, Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly won Tag Team of the Year at 26% of the vote. Coming in second place was the Young Bucks with 22% of the vote. And the New Day came in third with 20% of the vote. And Frank, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a big Red Dragon fan, but I am surprised the Young Bucks did not win Tag Team of the Year here at the Gerwick.net Year-End Awards. Because when you go online, when you go on Facebook, you go on message boards, it is all about the Young Bucks.
Yeah, but a lot of that too, Adley, is a lot of negative about the Young Bucks. You know, a lot of people like the Young Bucks, but then there's a lot of people out there that don't like the Young Bucks. Jim Cornette doesn't really care for the Young Bucks.
No, he does not.
So there's a lot of people that don't like them. There's a lot of people that don't like the New Day, you know? So I'm okay with the way it turned out, but I do agree with you. Young Bucks should have came in number one because, you know, everybody loves a super kick party, and then some people out there don't.
Of course. Now, going on to Announcer of the Year, I was a little surprised about this. We'll talk about this a little in detail. Announcer of the Year was awarded to Mauro Ranallo, who got 36% of the votes. Vampiro came in second place with 22% of the vote. Renee Young came in third with 19% of the vote. And then you got Corey Graves, 14%, JBL at 3%, and then Michael Cole in fifth place with 2% of the votes. I was surprised Mauro Ranallo even got nominated, let alone won, because of the fact that, you know, he made his debut this week on SmackDown, and he's been doing MMA, kickboxing, and boxing commentary for all of 2015. He hasn't done any pro wrestling commentary besides the taped New Japan shows. They weren't like live, the wrestlers weren't live events. So I was a little surprised, but you know, Mauro Ranallo is one of the best combat sports commentators in the game, arguably the best. So, I mean, I'm not going to complain about this.
Yeah, I'm kind of, I'm kind of like, can't believe that Corey Graves wasn't higher on that list. Because I think that Corey Graves, you know, has been doing a great job as an announcer on NXT as being that heel voice. So I'm kind of surprised that he wasn't up higher on the list.
Now, Renee Young's actually in third place at 19% for Announcer of the Year. So my question is, I don't know this, but perhaps you will. Besides, like, the pay-per-view kickoff shows and those like, prediction panels they have, does Renee Young do any commentary for any of the shows?
I don't think she does, no, because I'm a very big, viewer of NXT, and I don't hear her voice on there.
I mean, does she do commentary for Superstars or the main event? I don't know.
Not that I've seen. I've actually seen, what's that dude's? I don't know his name offhand, but it was one guy and Xavier Woods doing commentary for Superstars at one point.
All right.
I forgot the damn guy's name, though. That sucks. He does those, I'll tell you who he was. He was the guy that got bitch slapped by Stephanie McMahon a couple weeks ago on Raw, backstage.
Tom Phillips.
There you go. It was Tom Phillips and Xavier Woods doing commentary on Superstars. I saw that.
All right. So now we go to TV Show of the Year. And no surprise here, NXT with a whopping 41% of the vote came in first place. The Gerwick.net faithful voted NXT as Show of the Year. Coming in second place was SmackDown with 19% of the vote. Lucha Underground in third place with 13% of the vote. Raw coming in fourth at 10%. And Ring of Honor with 9% of the vote. Impact Wrestling with 4% of the vote as well. New Japan with 3% of the vote. Now, I think it's kind of funny because, Frankie, you and I are longtime wrestling fans. And if you would have told us like 10 years ago or maybe more than 10 years ago that someday Raw would be considered the best wrestling show on television, we would think you were stupid. We'd think you were silly.
Adley, I'm going to tell you right now. Honestly, dude. I have been watching a lot of the Raw episodes, Raw is War episodes on the network that they posted because they got like 99 up there in 2000 and 2001. So I'm like reliving the invasion angle. And Raw really wasn't that good. It was some weeks it was, and there was a lot of weeks that it wasn't. And I agree with certain people out there when they say the Attitude Era is kind of overblown. It's overhyped. I agree with that because, I lived through the Attitude Era, but now that you go back, you're a little older now, you go back and watch those shows, Raw really isn't that good of a show. I mean, what is Raw about Monday Night Raw?
The thing is, this is probably another subject for another show that you and I can go into, but the way I look at the Attitude Era is that, yeah, there's really no standout matches on Raw all the time, but there were standout moments. And usually it's the moments that always get people talking more than the matches if you're a casual fan. Of course, we're hardcore fans here at Gerwick.net. So, I always appreciate what the Attitude Era brought. I think 98 and 99 were the best years, and then it kind of tapered off, halfway through 2000 and, to what we got today.
Yeah, that's the thing right there. I'm going to agree with you on that 100% because that's where I think it kind of took off there a little bit. When 1999 came into play, everything was just on point. It was just they were the dominant show, okay? But towards the end of 99, especially when I can pinpoint the forming of the McMahon-Helmsley era faction, I didn't care for that at all. And that's where I kind of tuned out a little bit and, tried to stick with WCW at the time, but You know, I can see why Raw is just, you know, why Raw got that low. And it's kind of surprising to me also, as we're recording this, that NXT was number one, but SmackDown came in at number two.
I know SmackDown at 19%, Lucha Underground at number three with 13%. I gotta tell you, not a lot of people get the El Rey Network. So, but I guarantee, if El Rey Network was in many homes, let's say Spike TV, I think the number would be a lot higher because Lucha Underground is one hell of a show. They do a lot of different things. They actually improved on the Royal Rumble concept, in my opinion, with the Aztec Warfest setup they did. I love the Dario Cueto character. I love the fact they do seasons. That sort of keeps fresh and everything. So I think if they can get more clearance and more homes, more people are going to be talking about Lucha Underground in the months and weeks to come.
Maybe so. I mean, I watched a couple episodes, and I have to admit, it wasn't for me. It just wasn't for me. But if you're a fan of professional wrestling and you want to watch that, you know, brand of entertainment, go right ahead. You can watch Lucha Underground. You can watch TNA. You can watch Ring of Honor. You can watch any damn thing you want to. You know, I'm not going to tell you not to, but we're up here to give our opinion about what we think is good and what we think sucks.
For Female Wrestler of the Year, you're gonna like this one, Frank. The Sasha Banks has been crowned Female Wrestler of the Year at Gerwick.net with 39% of the vote. Coming in second place is Bayley with 21% of the vote. Charlotte in third place. Actually, Charlotte and Paige are tied in third place for with 9%, and Nikki Bella in fourth place with 6%.
So Nikki Bella's in fourth place, huh? And Sasha Banks, the boss, got in first place. That's how it's supposed to be.
Oh, you can't disagree with that whatsoever. It's just a shame that she hasn't been used as prominently as Charlotte, but when you're Ric Flair's daughter, you know, you have to expect that.
Yeah, and we got some Sasha Banks news coming up, so stay tuned for that.
We do indeed. Now, I'm not going to give away who's winning so far with the Wrestler of the Year awards, but let me read you the nominees of people you could vote for if you head over to Gerwick.net and vote for Wrestler of the Year. Shinsuke Nakamura, Seth Rollins, AJ Styles, EC3, Finn Balor, Jay Lethal, Kevin Owens, Kazuchika Okada, John Cena, Roderick Strong, and Hiroshi Tanahashi. So if you think one of those guys had Wrestler of the Year, definitely go over to Gerwick.net and cast your vote.
Absolutely.
And no, and that will do it for the 2015 Gerwick.net Year End Awards.
All right, so let's talk right now about the biggest story in professional wrestling right now. It's been going on since, you know, late Sunday, going into Monday. The fact that apparently Adley is being reported that New Japan Pro Wrestling stars Shinsuke Nakamura, AJ Styles, Doc Gallows, and the Machine Gun Karl Anderson are all headed to World Wrestling Entertainment. Now, it's a big story because Gallows, Anderson, and Styles were all part of the Bullet Club faction in New Japan. And Nakamura, outside of Okada, is probably the biggest star over there. So they're all headed to WWE. They did an angle at the New Year's show for New Japan where Kenny Omega pinned Shinsuke Nakamura in a tag match. His tag team partner was AJ Styles. He then attacked AJ Styles after the match and officially fired him from Bullet Club. AJ Styles gave a traditional Japanese bow on his way out of New Japan. And now, rumors are going rampant right now that these four guys are indeed headed to WWE. And in the case of AJ Styles and Nakamura, they are going to completely bypass NXT and head right to the main roster. Now, what are your thoughts on that?
This is quite the coup for WWE. And it really gives you that old school wrestling fan feeling. You really just It really soothes your soul. It makes you so excited to see that such an acquisition like this can still happen in 2016. Because you remember back in the day when people were jumping left from company to company, promotion to promotion, left and right. And that was such a good thing, feeling to see, oh, this guy's on Raw. Now this guy's on Nitro. This guy's in ECW. And over the past like 10 years, we really haven't had that, with the exception of TNA, but that doesn't count. So basically, now when you acquire, you know, four of the of New Japan Pro Wrestling's top wrestlers, it makes you feel like, wow, like this feels like they, you know, they're just get rating more talent. And rating is really the wrong word. It reminds me of what happened in January 2000 when WWE signed the Radicals, Eddie Guerrero, Chris Benoit, Perry Saturn, and Dean Malenko. and they all appeared on Raw together. It kind of gives me that feeling. Now, I don't think all four of these guys are going to come in at the same time, but still, it has some of the same tunes as that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know necessarily if it's as big as that, and I'll tell you why I say that is that, a lot of these guys here, Perry Saturn, Dean Malenko, Guerrero, and Benoit, they were established over in the work they've done in, WCW, the work they had done in ECW, and the work they've done in Japan. Now, the difference is this, is that a lot of American fans out there probably are not familiar with Karl Anderson, and a lot of wrestling fans probably remember Doc Gallows as Luke Gallows or Festus in WWE, and they didn't watch him in TNA when he was part of Aces and Eights. A lot of wrestling fans probably have never heard of AJ Styles, and AJ Styles spent a lot of time in TNA. And a lot of fans here in America probably haven't heard of Nakamura. And it's not so much that these guys aren't big stars, it's just that casual fans in wrestling, they probably don't watch that product. So I don't think it's on the same level. I'm excited about it, but here's my thing with the situation, is that yeah, the internet's been having the biggest orgasms in the past couple of days about the situation. But even though WWE ran a story on their website talking about the situation with these guys coming over, even though Finn Balor posted a picture on Instagram saying they should have been here wearing a Bullet Club shirt, nothing is official yet. Nothing has been signed yet. Okay, and my thing is that everybody out there is they're debunking this story. They're saying that it's not going to happen. Listen, I'm not a damn psychic, at least not a psychic. We don't know if it's going to happen or not. But I'll tell you one thing: if I am WWE and I have signed these four guys, maybe I want to keep it a secret and maybe debut them at the Royal Rumble. Because I mean, the thing about internet, the internet fans is we have to know every damn thing that's going to happen ahead of time so we can say, I told you so. You know what I mean? And sometimes we just need to be surprised. And I think that's what's going to happen here.
I mean, the way I look at the situation is it's the perfect example of a divide between the casual wrestling fan and hardcore wrestling fans. Hardcore wrestling fans are losing their mind over this. Casual wrestling fans that only know what's on their TV and nothing more really are going to have no idea who these guys are except for possibly AJ Styles that they watch TNA once in a while. Now, I mean, in my opinion, Doc Gallows, who the former Luke Gallows in WWE is gonna get a second chance to make a first impression. He's dramatically improved since his time in New Japan Pro Wrestling. So it'll be interesting to see what he brings to the table. Plus, he's a big guy. WWE likes big guys, so that's gonna be good for him. Karl Anderson is one of the most respected workers in the industry among his peers, and he is truly a top talent. AJ Styles, arguably the best wrestler in the business today. Just extremely talented. We all know his exploits from TNA. He's really rebranded himself the last 2 years over New Japan Pro Wrestling and Ring of Honor. And he's actually gotten better, which is scary considering how good he was before. And also, I mean, just to go off, I'm going to try not to go off topic too much, but with AJ Styles, I think TNA really missed the boat with him. And some people might disagree with me because I always felt TNA's biggest flaw was that they always wanted to be WWE lights. They never really had confidence in their own roster, which is really the big thing between ECW, WWE, and WCW. You had three different sets of wrestlers to choose from, where TNAers always wanted former WWE guys, former WWE guys, and they really had no confidence in their own roster. I feel that they should have gotten behind AJ Styles and said, hey, this is our guy. This is why you watch TNA and push other guys. But I'm ranting on too long. AJ Styles, arguably one of the best wrestlers in the world, in my opinion. Frank D. Shinsuke Nakamura is the best professional wrestler in the world today, and he's not only a great in-ring worker, but he's also charismatic. He also brings that entertainment quality that Vince McMahon likes in pro wrestling. He likes that showcasing. Talent, be able to really just move the people and get people into it. He's flashy, he's charismatic, and that's a hell of a deal they got with him. And right now, he's currently the New Japan Pro Wrestling Intercontinental Champion. And a report just went out and came out from Japan that he is leaving New Japan at the end of the month, because even though none of these four guys have signed, they all gave their notice to New Japan Pro Wrestling right before the Tokyo Dome show on January 4th. So they all intend to go to WWE. Whether it gets signed, who really knows?
Well, here's the thing, though, and I think we have to be, you know, we have to take this into account. The track record with WWE and superstars from other organizations is not very good. They could hold some bullshit and say, you know what, AJ Styles, he made a name for himself in TNA. He made a name for himself in, you know, New Japan. So we're going to, you know, chop him down to size and show him that you are not on the level of a WWE superstar. You know they do this shit, Adley, because they did it with all the guys that came over from WCW. They came over to WWE. So I'm not really convinced that. I'm excited about it. If it's going to happen, I'm excited about it. And it's some, you know, some fresh faces, but familiar faces. But at the same time, the track record is not very good with WWE, especially when it comes to Japanese superstars. I mean, look at what they, I mean, Kung Fu Naki. Do I need to say more?
No, Frank T, I agree with you. In any other time period in professional wrestling, if this was taking place, I would totally agree with you, and I really wouldn't be as excited. But with all of the injuries that WWE has suffered right now, with all the wrestlers currently out of action, and all the plans WWE has had to change, plus the fact that they're paying Styles and Nakamura big money, they may have to kind of put aside their ego for a change and kind of push these two as legitimate superstars, as opposed to just saying, hey, let's knock them down a few pegs before we stop pushing them again. Also, though, this is one fact that no one's talking about, Frank D, and I want to get your opinion on it as well. Most likely, all these guys are getting their names changed. Because Doc Gallows, I mean, WWE likes to have their names, their IP, attached to a certain wrestler, so in the events they leave, they can't use that name and make money off of their IP. So Doc Gallows was formerly Luke Gallows in WWE. That's not going to happen anymore because you currently have Luke Harper. Just like in the Invasion, they changed Shane Helms to Gregory Helms because you had Shane McMahon. Machine Gun Carl Anderson, probably the least known wrestler out of the four. They're going to have to change his name to what? I don't know. Then, of course, Shinsuke Nakamura, they'll probably give him something. I mean, they changed, you know, Kenta's name to Hideo Itami, so they're probably going to change his name. And then AJ Styles is the big mystery because he may be the most well-known of the four, even though he's still, it's hardcore compared to casual. But the question is, what do they do with him? I mean, AJ Styles, think about it. They just got rid of an AJ, so they really kind of want a risk of that. People thinking about AJ Styles, I don't know, maybe. Do they just take out the AJ and simply call him Styles? Do they change his name entirely, or do they just call him, hey, you know, AJ Styles?
Well, you're going to have to keep him as AJ Styles. And the reason why is because I believe he has an AJ written, a tattoo on the side of his stomach.
That's a good point. That is a very good point.
And so unless you're going to put the guy in a bodysuit, I don't see how you can change his name. I mean, AJ Styles, it can be kind of the same situation when they signed over CM Punk. You know, Paul Heyman was a big advocate in CM Punk keeping his name. So we don't know yet until it happens, you know. But you do make a good point about the name changes. I mean, we all thought Samoa Joe was going to have a different name when he came in, but he hasn't. You know, so I don't know, man. But I would hate to see them change AJ Styles' name because, I mean, why change his name? Everybody knows who he is. And I know WWE, you know, I understand that they want to always trademark this and trademark that and own this and own that. I get that. But at the same time, maybe they can work out a deal with Styles where he can lease him the name, AJ Styles.
Oh, no. I mean, I really hope they keep AJ Styles. I mean, but, you know, WWE always likes to put their stamp on a particular wrestler. But let me ask you this, Frank D. Also, a lot of people are predicting AJ Styles is going to debut in the Royal Rumble match, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. But the question is, do you really debut him in the Royal Rumble match if he's not going to win it?
The Royal Rumble has always been about surprises, who's going to be the one of the entrants in that match. And now, because of what's on the line in the Royal Rumble match, I mean, I get your point, but if you don't debut Styles and you want to maybe have Styles and these guys at WrestleMania, when do you debut him? Do you debut him at Fastlane?
I mean, I think they make more of an impression they debut at the Rumble as opposed to Fastlane. I really hope they don't wait to debut these guys until the day after WrestleMania for that Monday Night Raw where all the big surprises happen because, you know, they need the help now. And they need to bring these guys in as soon as they can.
Yeah, they do. Because we'll get to that in a minute. But, you know, as we're talking right now doing this show, There was a rumor going on at me earlier today that WWE had purchased the rights to Bullet Club. And everybody was thinking that this was actually a real story. As of right now, it's not. I actually reached out to ProWrestlingTees.com and they told me that they are still selling Bullet Club merchandise. So a guy on a Facebook group called Wrestle Nation actually looked up the trademark for Bullet Club and it's still owned by New Japan Pro Wrestling. So WWE has not purchased the rights to the Bullet Club. And why would they purchase the rights to Bullet Club in a PG era? I don't really think WWE wants to have a group called Bullet Club.
I mean, this is a company that's being sponsored by, you know, K Jewelers, Toys R Us, Coca-Cola. Their PG is all about family. And plus, this is also the same company that told Seth Rollins to stop doing the curb stomp because it's too violent. So they're not going to purchase, much less use, a name called the Bullet Club with the word bullet or gun in it or anything. Because even if they keep the name Carl Anderson, he's not going to be called the Machine Gun. That's for damn sure.
No, absolutely not. No, I mean, there was a rumor going around, you know, a few weeks ago that Vince McMahon and company were actually thinking about changing Roman Reigns' gear from the tat gear to something else because of the incident that happened out here in San Bernardino, California, the shooting. And I don't know. They never did that. They're not going to go with Bullet Club. It's not going to happen. I can see them going with Balor Club or something else, but Bullet Club is not going to happen in WWE. And why would New Japan sell WWE their hottest angle they have? Why would they sell them the hottest merchandise they have in the whole company? That would be asinine stupid.
Oh, I completely agree, because they're still using the Bullet Club, because Kenny Omega jumped Shinsuke Nakamura at their New Year's Dash show, so he looks like he's going to be the next challenger for the IC title. He might be the one they put it on, and now Kenny Omega is the leader of the Bullet Club with the Young Bucks, you know, still in tow, and Cody Hall and everybody else, Bad Luck Fale and everybody else. So it's still going strong over there, so they're not selling that.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Also, we were talking about, Frank, speaking of talent going places, James Storm has decided to plant his flag with TNA and go back home as opposed to going to WWE.
Well, I mean, you know, apparently the situation here is that they pretty much lowballed him. WWE lowballed James Storm, and TNA gave him more money and more options on the contract. So if you're James Storm, you're going to take the best deal that's right for you and for your family. But as we were talking about offline, Atlee, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that his biggest supporter was Billy Gunn, and Billy Gunn is not employed anymore by WWE.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Billy Gunn was by far his biggest supporter. There were photos of showed of Billy Gunn giving James Storm a tour of the WWE Performance Center facility. And also, he was talking him up to everybody. And maybe that had a little bit to do with it. But there was a report that went out on ProWrestlingSheet.com where James Storm, this reporting where James Storm was offered $100,000 a year by WWE with a downside guarantee. So with $100,000 a year plus travel, rent a car expenses, paying for your plane ticket, hotel, supplements, and everything else, you're not really, 100 grand is really not that much money. TNA, according to the report, offered him, they're paying him 2.5 times that amount of $100,000. Plus, he gets a bigger chunk of the merchandise. He gets some more days off. He's not going to wrestle a full-time schedule. And on top of that, his money is guaranteed even if TNA goes out of business, because if TNA goes out of business, Panda Energy is still in play, and they're the ones writing the checks. So that's a sweet deal if you're a family man like James Storm. You're guaranteed regardless. And because TNA is paying him that money and that much money, and they're really not shelling out big contracts like that anymore, I see James Storm being the face of TNA.
Well, you know what? Here's the thing. James Storm, to me, never really fit in NXT. The appearances that I saw of James Storm in NXT, he just didn't fit. I look at James Storm as a TNA guy, and he will always be a TNA guy, in my opinion. And he went where, you know, it made the most business sense, and that's just what it is. It made sense for him to go. But I saw an article today where Dixie Carter said that WWE was raiding her talent. They were raiding the talent of TNA. And I'm kind of like, how the hell is WWE raiding the talent when these guys are showing up to Full Sail University on their own looking for a job? So that makes no sense to me.
I mean, it's stupid of her to say that because, number one, TNA's not offering guaranteed contracts anymore. They're doing pay-per-appearance contracts, and people are going on their own to go to WWE, you know, so it's just funny. It's absurd. It really is. I mean, she's just trying to get her name out there, get TNA's name out there, because they're on Pop TV now. And, you know, I hope it just turns things around for TNA, but history says otherwise. And, Frank, very good point about James Storm, you know, being a TNA guy. His TNA colors are just way too strong. You can't say the same for AJ Styles because he's 2 years in New Japan and Ring of Honor have definitely rebranded him as a different type of wrestler. But James Storm, you know, not going to WWE, in a way it reminds me of Bret Hart, because when Bret Hart jumped from WWF to WCW back in the day, even though it was cool, whatever, you're a Bret Hart fan, Bret Hart still had those strong WWE colors. So he always looked like a WWE guy on a WCW show. And I think on the NXT shows that James Storm was on, he looked like a TNA guy on a WWE show.
Oh, absolutely. And it was, I mean, it was, nothing had changed about James Storm. He still looked like he was in TNA, except the letters are a little bit different, NXT. So, I mean, you know, and apparently on Impact, you know, they reformed Beer Money, him and Bobby Roode.
They did, yes. James Storm cut a pretty good promo where he came out of the audience out of the blue. It's actually funny because during the match between Bram and Bobby Roode, near the conclusion of the match, the beginning of James Storm's music accidentally played. And then Josh Matthews and Pope had to cover it up, like, oh, technical difficulties, anything can happen here at Impact. And then, of course, James Storm comes out of the audience, throws Bram out of the ring, looks at a shocked James Storm, and he cuts a promo basically saying, you know, his grandma said that if you ain't happy doing what you're doing, you got to leave. And the reason he left TNA is because of the fact that that wasn't him. The person he was portraying wasn't him, which basically saying that he hated the gimmick, hated the character. He really wasn't the cult leader. And then he said when he came out that James Storm was the biggest disappointment in TNA, he was like, you know what, I'm going to right this wrong and come back. So they had a good reason for him to come back to the fold.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw James Storm in NXT, it kind of reminded me of the old cowboy James Storm, you know, and not, like you say, the cult leader when he was leading the revolution, you know, angle down there. So, I mean, you know, listen, if James Storm is happy in TNA, he gets to work with Bobby Roode again. And I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not going to watch TNA, but I was a huge fan of that Beer Money tag team back in the day. So, if that's where they're going with it, that's all fine and dandy. And, Adam, you actually watched the TNA debut on Pop TV last night, so why don't you let the listeners out here know what you thought about TNA Impact.
TNA made its debut on Pop TV, its official debut, and I gotta tell you, I'm optimistic that they can turn things around, but I wasn't impressed. I mean, it had a very minor league look to it. It was in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and they really had to work hard to hide how many people were not in the building. So that was the other thing. And the two world title matches also, I think, it left a lot to be desired. And it just made it worse because the finals of the world title match was EC3 versus Matt Hardy for the TNA world title. And EC3 ended up beating Matt Hardy clean in the middle of the ring for the championship. And because he did his one percenter off the second rope, which didn't really look that good. And you had Pope and Josh Matthews putting over the match like it was match of the year. And Pope even said, this is match of the year, baby! And I'm thinking, like, really? Are you watching the same match again? They're commentators. They have to, you know, pump it up as much as they possibly can. Again, it just wasn't, like the worst show in the world, but at the same time, it just looked like a minor league, and it was really same old, same old. I did like the debut of Mike Bennett, though. He's the Miracle Mike Bennett, and he cut a pretty good promo out there, Maria Kanellis, talking about how, like, you know, he is the miracle professional wrestling needs, and he has his sights set on the TNA World Heavyweight Championship, and they made him, they put him over as a very, you know, big deal, and people that, you know, don't know Mike Bennett, you know, I think you're going to be impressed with what you see with him. But it just, the world title matches weren't that good. And I just thought it was dumb that they went back to EC3 and Matt Hardy in the finals of the world title tournament and give it back to EC3, considering Matt Hardy beat him for the world title at Bound for Glory. So it's kind of like, what was the point of taking the belt off Matt Hardy and then, you know, going through this whole tournament just to put it back on EC3, you know? It was just mind-boggling. Like, it was nothing new.
And speaking of TNA real quick, you know, the fact, you know, we were talking earlier about the New Japan signings, you know, we were talking offline a little bit, Allie, that, you know, Machine Gun Carl Anderson was actually very close to signing with TNA and then decided to go with WWE at the last minute.
Oh, yeah. According to the Wrestling Observer, it was a very difficult decision for Carl Anderson to leave New Japan Pro Wrestling because that's been his home for so long. And he was very close to going to TNA, and they actually wanted him to debut on Pop TV because they really want to have a lot of new faces debuting on Pop TV. But at the end of the day, he kind of thought about it and said, you know, I'm not going to go to TNA because they're a rival in New Japan, and New Japan works with Ring of Honor, and Ring of Honor and TNA are rivals. Plus, once WWE came calling, it was like, okay, I'm going to the whip. You know, absolutely. I mean, and who wouldn't under that situation? You know what I mean? I mean, Carl Anderson, I'm not sure how old he is, but, you know, with AJ Styles being 38 and Nakamura being 35, this is their chance to make that money, make that paper.
Especially for AJ Styles. I mean, the guy had to make the move now. He couldn't make the move later. He couldn't make the move 2 years now. He had to do it now. And it's, I think in the long run, it's going to work for him.
Oh, absolutely, because you got to think about it. With WWE, I mean, more than any other pro wrestling company on the planet, if you get over, I mean, you get really over, you're going to make buku money. And AJ Styles realized at 38, almost 39 years old, this is the time. You know, if I'm gonna get that big, you know, multi-million dollar run, it's now or never.
Absolutely. Listen, it's 2016. I ain't going to wish TNA no bad, you know, luck or nothing that bullshit. I'm just going to be like this. If you like TNA, if you're a TNA wrestling fan, hey, they're on Pop TV now. You can check out Impact Wrestling. If you like Ring of Honor, you can check out Ring of Honor on Comet. If you like NXT, WWE Network, your first month is free. Yeah, listen, you know, we're starting 2016 out differently than we did 2015. You dig what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I mean, when can you say you can watch the Royal Rumble for free? I mean, that's a pretty good deal.
Absolutely. And speaking of the Royal Rumble, Adley, basically Jericho came out and said that he is going to be one of the entrants into the 2016 Royal Rumble match, which led on to the main event in which we saw Mr. McMahon come out as a special referee for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship match between Roman Reigns and Sheamus. And I'm telling you right now, man, Vince McMahon, even for 70, you know, that's all fine and dandy, but Vince is starting to look his age now. He's really starting to look it, and it's a damn shame that you have to still depend on a 70-year-old Vince McMahon to come save the day. And that shows right there the biggest problems in WWE, that you have to, you know, depend on Mr. McMahon. But we'll get to that in a minute. The point of the Royal Rumble, though, is the fact that at the end of that match, it was announced that the next time Roman Reigns would be defending the WWE World Heavyweight Championship would be at the Royal Rumble against 29 other guys. So the Royal Rumble match will now be for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. This is the second time in history that the belt's been on the line during a Royal Rumble match. So what's your take on that?
Oh, absolutely. You instantly think of the 1992 Royal Rumble where the winner would get to win the vacant WWF championship. And, of course, Ric Flair, coming in at number 3, made it to the end and won the WWF championship. Now, 2016, Roman Reigns in a different situation where he is defending his WWE World Heavyweight Championship in the Royal Rumble. And so far, you know, including Roman Reigns, you know, total 10 people have been announced for the Rumble so far. Roman Reigns, Chris Jericho, Bray Wyatt, Eric Rowan, Luke Harper, Braun Strowman, Dolph Ziggler, Ryback, Big Show, and Curtis Axel, who apparently has been the Royal Rumble, you know, for the last 365 days. So they got 10 people in there so far. And I like this because it really turns everything around, because there have been some years I really didn't like the idea of the Royal Rumble being for the main event at WrestleMania, because it kind of pigeonholes the company. Sometimes it handcuffs the company where, okay, we have to do this. This is the tradition. Every year, the winner goes on the main event WrestleMania, or it recently is they get a world title shot. So you kind of handcuff yourself creatively because they don't want to break from tradition. This turns everything completely upside down, because now you have no idea what's going to headline WrestleMania, and you have no idea if Roman Reigns is going to make it out of the Royal Rumble as champion.
I'm predicting right now number 29 in the Royal Rumble match will be Triple H, and I think Triple H is going to beat Roman Reigns, and Triple H is going to leave the Royal Rumble match as new WWE World Heavyweight Champion.
No, that's definitely the prevailing theory, and it wouldn't surprise me if all And all, if that happens now, Frank D, if that happens, Triple H comes in at number 29, wins the Rumble, wins the championship, the question becomes, do they have the Roman Reigns Triple H rematch at Fastlane the next month, or does Triple H versus Roman Reigns headline WrestleMania?
I think it headlines WrestleMania, or something headlines. I mean, here's the thing. This is where the whole plan gets, you know, screwed up in the first place, because you have that pay-per-view right in the middle. And if you didn't have that and you just use that month to build towards Mania, you wouldn't have these questions coming up right now that we don't have the answers to.
Thank you, Frank. You know? I have been saying that for as long as I can remember. They should not have a February pay-per-view and just use that to build toward WrestleMania.
But here's the problem, Adley. WrestleMania is looking a little weaker because John Cena is not going to be out for 6 to 9 months. He has a torn rotator cuff, and I guess he's having shoulder surgery. As of today, he has shoulder surgery. So John Cena is not going to be competing at WrestleMania 32. That takes him off. Also off Randy Orton, Seth Rollins. The Rock will be at 32, but there's no telling if he's going to wrestle or not. So, yeah, they're fucked.
Yeah, they are, because, again, that list you just wrote of John Cena, Seth Rollins, Cesaro. The reports are that Sasha Banks is injured, and Randy Orton. Five names that you cannot use at WrestleMania this year. And plus, I mean, the big rumor was they were probably going to do a Undertaker versus John Cena match at WrestleMania. That's completely out of the equation now. And yeah, The Rock is appearing, but that's the key word, appearing. They're very careful to use that phrase. He is appearing at WrestleMania, not necessarily wrestling. So, I mean, does that really add any intrigue, or do they possibly get him to wrestle? I mean, you and I were talking off air, Frank D, about, you know, some of the Hollywood commitments and why it'd be hard to get him to wrestle.
Yeah, basically, it's all about insurance. Rock has a bunch of movies that he's going to be filming next year. I believe one of them is that damn Baywatch movie. So the movie studio is just not comfortable with Dwayne wrestling at WrestleMania with the chances that he might get hurt. So Rock says that he's going to appear, but he never said he was wrestling. He said he was going to appear. So we don't know if this means Rock is going to guest host WrestleMania or whatever. But all I know is this right now. It doesn't really matter if you got the four New Japan guys coming into WWE tomorrow. It doesn't matter who you got booked on WrestleMania. Stone Cold Steve Austin can come out of retirement and headline WrestleMania 32. It won't make a bit of difference because, in my opinion, right now, the way WWE is, they are not going to put 100,000 people in that stadium. I just don't see it happening. And I might be wrong, but I just don't see it happening currently because you don't have anybody. There is no John Cena. You don't have Randy Orton. You don't have Cesaro. You don't have Seth Rollins. You don't have the ingredients that call for a bunch of people coming to see your show. So I don't see WrestleMania 32 coming off very well at all. And I've read a comment on Facebook where somebody says that all the bad shit that Vince McMahon's done throughout his life is coming back now to bite him in the ass.
You know, karma can be a bitch sometimes, and I wouldn't be surprised. But let me kind of transition back and forth between the Rumble and WrestleMania for a second, because one of the things Vince McMahon said in the storyline to Roman Reigns is that, you know, Triple H is going to get you, and when he comes back, you'll never see it coming. So that implies that something bad is going to happen to Roman Reigns. Now, does it happen by the hands of Triple H, the bad thing that's going to happen to Roman Reigns, or does Triple H, do we buy into all the fan theories, and does Triple H bring in the Balor Club and they take him out?
I like that idea. I like the idea of the Balor Club, of Finn Balor, Gallows, Anderson, and maybe even AJ Styles. I like that idea of them coming out and attacking Roman Reigns and starting a war. And these are Triple H's, you know, hired guys. I like that idea, actually. I think it could work.
Absolutely. I think it would be a great idea because it would be all that – it'd be a big talking point coming out of Roman. Because last year, the big talking point coming out of the Royal Rumble was like, man, the Rumble sucked because Roman Reigns won and everybody booed him out of the building. And not even his cousin The Rock could get a pop out of the crowd to cheer for Roman Reigns. This year, if the Balor Club comes in at Triple H's behest and they take out Roman Reigns, there's a new champion crowd, people will be talking. Hardcores will be marking out. You and I will be marking out. And even casuals will be like, oh my God, who are these guys? You know, so it's definitely got some intrigue to it. Now, Frank, let's put our booking hat on for a second. If you are booking the Royal Rumble this year with the certain ingredients in play, do you have Reigns eliminated before the match is over, or is he the last guy eliminated?
I think Roman Reigns needs to last to the end. I think this is a time where you have to continue on building and booking Roman Reigns as a badass. And the most badass thing he can probably do is last, you know, that long in the Rumble match. But if you bring in these guys that we were just talking about, and not so much Nakamura, I'm talking about, you know, Styles, Gallows, and Anderson. If you bring them in with maybe a Finn Balor, I can see them debuting at the Royal Rumble, maybe kind of like the Shield did.
Well, that'd be great. And the thing is, I mean, when you call it the Balor Club, you know, okay, it's all going to be about Finn Balor, despite the fact that three of these New Japan guys are coming in, you know, especially AJ Styles, because they are so high, especially Triple H, they are so high on Finn Balor as a worker. And many people feel that Finn Balor should have got the deal that AJ Styles and Nakamura got, where it's not an NXT deal, it's a WWE deal. But, I mean, he's ready for prime time. He's been ready for prime time for a while. And, I mean, it's funny. We're talking about all these guys and all these possibilities, but Finn Balor may be the big winner in all of this.
Right, because here's the deal. Finn Balor really doesn't want to move to the main roster right now. He wants to stay at NXT. And I understand his point. He doesn't want to come up there because he knows that he's probably going to get lost in the shuffle. Here's the thing. Yeah, people say Triple H has huge plans for Finn Balor, and I get that. But Triple H has plans for a lot of different people, but then when they come to the main roster, they fall by the wayside. A la Tyler Breeze, a la Sasha Banks. You know, I mean, track record isn't too good.
No, I agree, because the fact is, I've talked to a few people that, you know, had some inside sources at the Performance Center and NXT, and the word is that people have been saying that, man, NXT is a better environment to work in than WWE. It's just that you want that big payday that comes with being a WWE superstar. You want that recognition. But if you're just in it for the love of the game, the love of the sport, the love of professional wrestling, you know, NXT is the place. And a lot of people have been saying that lately. Finn Balor said it. Bayley said it. Mojo Rawley said it recently. And I wonder if that's going to get some heat on some guys where it's like, damn, they'd rather be a developmental than WWE, but you can understand the sentiment considering it seems to be the better place to work.
Well, it's smaller, and that's the thing about it. It's smaller, and you got people that, I mean, it's not, you know, it's not run like the main brand is. Like I said earlier, that main brand up there is a conglomerate. Yeah, it's still WWE, but it's Triple H running this on a smaller scale. You know, he can do a lot more things. He's not really under the radar so much of Vince McMahon. And that's the difference in the situation.
Oh, absolutely, because I there's a lot of people that Vince McMahon has to answer to, you know, stockholders, sponsors, that sort of thing. I guarantee you the day somebody comes to WWE and says, hey, we want to sponsor NXT, things will change, I promise you.
Absolutely, things will change.
Now, with the Rumble, Frank, I got to ask you this other question. What are your thoughts on this? In my opinion, being at the Rumbles for the WWE Championship, they got 10 people in already, 20 spots left. I don't think they can put any scrubs in this match.
No, you can't have jabroni bodies in this match. This match is for the WWE Championship. But because they are low on talent, you're probably going to see jabronis in the Rumble match. You're going to see scrubs in the match. So you're going to see the typical ones that you would normally see, but then you're going to have people in there just to throw out. And that's what they're going to do. I mean, they got Jericho in there, but is Jericho actually going to go and win the Rumble match? No, he's not. Big Show? No. Ryback? No. Kevin Owens, no. Dolph Ziggler, hell no. Ain't gonna happen.
Now, here's a big question. I mean, because it looks like right now, either Reigns is retaining or Triple H is probably gonna be one of the entrants and win it. But let's say Triple H does the Balor Club idea that you and I just discussed, and they cost Roman Reigns the championship. And then the question is, who gets the belt? Who else would you put the belt on if it's not Reigns or Triple H? I don't think they put it on Finn Balor his first night. Stranger things have happened. But who gets it?
I don't know. I mean, they better not give it back to damn Sheamus.
I mean, they have a lot of other stuff to, you know, in this Rumble. I mean, there's things we haven't thought about yet. I mean, for example, I mean, they could put Undertaker in this match. They could put Brock Lesnar in this match. They could bring up some NXT guys like Samoa Joe. You know, so there are a lot of other things that could happen in this Rumble. I mean, I think Brock Lesnar is going to find his way in this match.
I mean, Brock Lesnar could be the one to win the championship. But also, it could be Triple H versus Roman Reigns at Fastlane. And then you debut the Balor Club or something at Fastlane. I just wish they didn't have that middle pay-per-view. I really did. I just wish they would just get rid of that.
Oh, I agree, because that February pay-per-view, it's almost as if you know who... I mean, more, it's the most predictable show, because you know what's going to happen, you know what's not going to happen, because WrestleMania is right around the corner, which is why I've always said, get rid of it and just build to WrestleMania even more. Run more angles on Raw. Run more angles on SmackDown. Get people to really buy into WrestleMania. I mean, you get 2 months to promote the biggest show of the year, do it, you know?
So here's the deal, though, you know, Adley, as we were talking about, you know, the Royal Rumble and Roman Reigns. My thing is this, man. Since when the hell did the Roman Reigns love affair begin with WWE audience? I mean, wasn't it like a month ago that they were booing this guy out of the damn building and they were shitting all over Roman Reigns? All of a sudden now, you know, Mr. McMahon comes back and he puts him over, and all of a sudden now everybody loves Roman Reigns?
Oh, I mean, it's a complete 180 what's happened to Roman Reigns, because for years everybody's been saying, do not push him like John Cena. Make him a badass. Make him the guy that he was in The Shield. And you didn't get that. Now you're getting that. And everybody loves Roman. It's kind of like, okay, yes, this is the version of Roman Reigns we wanted to see. But they need to be careful, because they cannot make him... They'll keep him as a badass, but they cannot make him Steve Austin 2.0, because nobody can be Steve Austin 2.0, because there's only one Stone Cold Steve Austin. And if they fall in that trap, they keep mimicking the same things. I mean, the day Roman Reigns comes out with a beer truck, you know, that's a wrap. But, I mean, I like what they're doing with Roman Reigns right now. The fans do, too. And I think it's paying off at the moment.
Well, you know what? What I saw this past Monday, his little back-and-forth segment with Stephanie McMahon, I thought it was okay for what it was. You got to keep Roman Reigns in small spurts when he's out there on the promos, because, you know, his promo ability is just not there. So if you got him talking short and all that, that's fine. And I like the badass approach to Roman Reigns. My only thing that I was trying to get at was that all of a sudden now fans are behind Roman Reigns, but a month ago you were booing him out of the damn building. And it took 70-year-old Vince McMahon to get the job done. That's the case. Why the hell are you paying all these writers?
Oh, no, I think it's funny that, you know, 70-year-old Vince McMahon will, like, fall off a building to get his talent over and take every bump in the book where, you know, guys like Jerry Lawler and Ric Flair don't even let near the ring, barely. Just, you know, it's kind of funny how those guys can't get in the ring, but Vince McMahon can, you know. And say, so be careful, 70 years old, that's no joke. I mean, the body is more fragile than ever at that stage. But hey, you know, the guy's a madman. The guy loves his company. He'll bleed for his company. And it's paid off with, you know, Roman Reigns right now.
Yeah, and let's see how long it lasts. And like I said, I'm not here to rise on it. I saw Roman a few weeks ago. I was at the December 19th house show they did at the Forum in Inglewood, not Los Angeles, people. It ain't fucking Los Angeles. It's Inglewood, California, the Forum. It was the night that Brock Lesnar wrestled Alberto Del Rio. And some people were saying that when Roman Reigns was cutting his promo after the match he did with Sheamus, that everybody was leaving the building. Listen, that's not the case at all. What actually was going down was it was raining that night, and people were trying to get the hell out of the building because of the rain and because of the traffic. And if you're like me, you had an hour and a half drive to get back home. So it's not that we didn't want to hear what Roman had to say. It was raining. Try to get the hell out of there.
Oh, but you, Frank D, you said it best. I mean, we're buying it right now. It's doing good right now, but we have to wait and see what happens, because I mean, Vince McMahon, I mean, no matter what you think about him, when it comes to his on-screen persona and the way he feuds with people, he has a way of bringing the absolute best out of people. And that's what he's done with Roman Reigns right now. And Triple H, regardless of what you think about him, he also has that ability, and more times than not, brings the absolute best out of people. That's why this feud in some way is going to transition from Vince McMahon to Triple H. But then the key is, what will Roman Reigns do from there? Because if he can't do it on his own after being helped by two of the best in the industry, people will turn on him. It's kind of like Batista, where he had the feud with Triple H for most of 2005, I believe it was, when he got the championship and pinned Triple H in the main event of WrestleMania. Then they had those series of matches on pay-per-view culminating in Hell in a Cell, and everybody thought, oh, Batista's the man, Batista's the man. Then Batista gets drafted to SmackDown, feuds with JBL for his first match, and the match was the complete shits, and everybody was like, wow, like, what the hell happened to Batista? Now, JBL, you know, is really not the most dynamic worker. He's all right, but it really showed a lot of Batista's weaknesses as a guy leading the dance instead of being a good partner and following along with a good dancer. So, I mean, once McMahon and Triple H are out of the way, it's going to be time for Roman Reigns to swim on his own, and that's when we're going to find out if the fans stick with him.
Yeah, but here's also the other thing. What happens when you don't have Vince McMahon around anymore? What happens when, and I'm not talking about as far as the Roman Reigns angle. I'm talking about period in life. Because eventually one day, Mr. McMahon is going to depart us. So what are they going to do then? When there is no more Vince McMahon to come save the day, to get the talent over, because creative can't do it. But nonetheless, it's 2016, Ali, and where do you see WWE and wrestling going in 2016?
That's an interesting question, because in my opinion, you know, wrestling by nature, by its DNA, is not a corporate entity. Professional wrestling is not corporate. And they're trying to make professional wrestling corporate more than ever now, and WWE has the potential, the tools to do a lot of great things as far as their television goes, but they're really focusing more on being, you know, a respectable entertainment company as opposed to a, you know, great pro wrestling company. So a lot of things fall by the wayside. They play it safe, and as a result, the ratings kind of slip, creative kind of sucks, and you go from there. So I think it's going to be good, really good, up until WrestleMania. After that, my gut tells me it's going to slide back down to the normal bore, but who knows? Hopefully, I am wrong.
I think that it has a possibility to be, you know, a good year for professional wrestling, with the intrigue of the four guys coming in from New Japan and, you know, TNA being on Pop TV, and hopefully they, you know, can survive, not do any dumb shit to get them kicked off this network. Hopefully Ring of Honor finds its way. New Japan continues to be successful without these guys, and I hope that it's a prosperous year for 2016 for professional wrestling. I really do. I'm trying to look into the situation, not so much of a pessimist, but an optimist that things will actually get better. But at the same time, I'm not going to hold my breath, man. All right, so Adley, you know, before we end the Raw deal here, we got to talk about something that happened this week in 1999. January 4th, 1999, to be exact, the infamous Finger Poke of Doom on WCW Monday Nitro. If you remember, it was a title match between Kevin Nash defending against the returning Hollywood Hulk Hogan, who had retired, quote-unquote, and they did that angle in the Georgia Dome. But also, on the flip side, the WWF also presented a championship match that night as well between the champion The Rock against Mankind. And my God, Adley, did history happen that night on these two shows?
Oh, I mean, this is the perfect subject to talk about, being that we're in early January and this happened on January 4th, 1999. I mean, I was one of those fans, had my remote control in the hand, constantly flipping back and forth between the USA Network and TNT to watch Nitro and Raw. Nitro Raw, which one do I watch? And of course, Mick Foley winning the WWE World Heavyweight Championship was an amazing sight to behold. It all came together so beautifully. And plus, you never thought it would happen. I mean, Mick Foley was that upper mid-card main eventer, and he had a lot of respect not only in the industry but with the fans. And you just never thought they would put the belt on him. What they did, it was such a hallmark moment in many ways. It was amazing. It got one of the biggest pops I've ever heard for a championship win. And then you go to WCW, everything's kind of boiling to this ultimate showdown. You got Hulk Hogan coming out of retirement because he was running for president, challenges Kevin Nash for the World Heavyweight title. Goldberg is in jail currently because he was accused of stalking Miss Elizabeth. And then, of course, the charges get dropped. He heads back to the arena as the match unfolds. And then, boom, Finger Poke of Doom. And not only was it just a stupid idea, it might have sounded good on paper, Frank D. When they thought about it, it might have sounded great on paper. But when you're so stoked to see what's happening on Raw, and you see what happens on Raw, the Mick Foley title win, and then you switch to Nitro and you build to something big, and then that big thing is a finger poke? It's like, really? That's what you're giving us?
Yeah, you know, I watched that Nitro that night, and I was excited to see Hogan versus Nash and see where they were going to go with this. But I have to admit, when they deflated the crowd and then beat down Goldberg, and then you have Bagwell, and it's supposed to be NWO you know, the Wolfpack is supposed to be the elite at the time. But then when you have Bagwell in that faction, it kind of kills the purpose. But nonetheless, the Finger Book of Doom angle, I mean, I guess all it was basically to bring the NWO back together, you know, but you never should have went against the Black and White, man. It should all, it, you know, they went red and black in that, and it, there's nothing stronger than Black and White.
I've always agreed with that, Frank D. I always thought it was a mistake to go with the Wolfpack as the main NWO stable.
Yeah, it was stupid. You should have went back to the Black and White. And it's just, it, the NWO at this time anyways, in 99, the flavor of what made it cool was gone. That flavor ended at the end of 97, to be honest with you. That was done. And they just kept going back to the well with this one over and over again. So it was just, it was boring. And the Finger Poke of Doom was one of the worst things I ever saw in WCW. But on the flip side, when I turned over to Monday Night Raw, and I'm watching this match between The Rock and Mankind, I'm going to tell you right now, I was not sold on Mankind as WWF champion. I just wasn't feeling it.
You know, it's funny. I was shocked too when it initially happened, because I remember I was a senior in high school. I didn't have the internet back then, and I remember I was at the bus stop waiting for the bus to pick us up to go to school, talking to a bunch of wrestling fans. And remember that WWF Raw show was taped a week in advance in the Worcester Center in Worcester, Massachusetts. And a friend of mine went to that show, and I hadn't seen him, you know, over the Christmas break, but I saw him again for the first day of school, and he's like, "Hey, Allie, is you gonna watch Raw tonight?" I go, "Of course I'm gonna watch Raw. Why?" He's like, "Mankind wins the world title," and I was like, "Are you kidding me? Mankind wins the world title?" And I thought he was joking. And then I stuck off to the library, went on the internet, and I was like, "I can't believe it. Mick Foley is going to win the world title tonight," because I wasn't a Mick Foley fan back in the day, but over the years I grew to really respect him and understand and appreciate what he brings to the business.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about it too. I gained respect for him after that match he did with Undertaker at Hell in a Cell. That's where it all started for me, and I'm just being honest about it. But I just didn't buy him as WWF champion. But then it's like, you know, after a while, you know, it makes sense. And I just think that WCW, they should have been more focused on what they were doing instead of what the WWF was doing. And I think that's what hurt them. And to have, you know, two athletes like The Rock and Mankind, and have McMahon out there, and a corporation, and have DX and Stone Cold Steve Austin come out there, and all the elements that made that work, and then you present what you did with the Finger Poke of Doom. To me right there, honestly, that night was the night that I believe WCW truly died. I think that the fans of WCW kind of lost faith in the organization, they would pull off some bullshit like that.
And you got to remember, too, that whole episode of Raw was absolutely tremendous. I mean, that's the same episode of Raw where you had the hardcore championship match between Road Dogg and Al Snow, which some people feel is the best hardcore title match in WWE history, where they fought outside in the snow, and Road Dogg pile drove Al Snow through a pallet to win the match. And that's also where Shawn Michaels, you know, he was still WWE commissioner. He turned from heel commissioner, babyface commissioner, and then he got jumped by the corporation. He got put through the windshield. Remember that?
Yeah, that's when DX had to lock him out. Exactly. They had to lock him out, yeah.
And of course, I love how they actually gave Mick Foley the championship match, because originally the match was Mick Foley versus Triple H with Shane McMahon as a special guest referee, and the winner goes on to the Royal Rumble to be in the Royal Rumble match, and the loser cannot be in the Royal Rumble. So, of course, Shane McMahon helps Triple H win the match. Triple H kind of feels bad. He tells Mick, you know, sorry, just business, but Merry Christmas. Plants Shane McMahon with the pedigree. And then, of course, Mick Foley locks Shane McMahon up in an armbar and threatens to Vince, "I'm going to snap his arm if you don't give me a WWE Championship match tonight." And Vince is scared that his baby boy is going to get his arm broken, so he acquiesces to Mick Foley's commands and gives him a championship match, which I thought was brilliant writing, because if you think about it, that's the only chance in hell Foley had of getting a title match out of Vince McMahon.
Absolutely. And if you want to relive that moment, it's actually up right now on the WWE Network. So you can actually check out that episode of Raw. But that episode of Nitro that we're talking about is not up there currently. And that's our little trip down memory lane this week. And that's going to actually do it here for the Raw Deal Podcast, the first Raw Deal Podcast of 2016. And I'm sure myself and Evie Green will be back And we're going to have some follow-ups to find out exactly what's going to happen here with these New Japan signings. If it happens, it happens. If it don't, it don't. But right now, we just don't know because nothing has been confirmed yet. But Allie, one more time, go ahead and plug your social media.
You guys can hit me up on Twitter at @LeeGreen. And you guys can see me blog about MMA, comics, pro wrestling, movies at thegreenscreen.net. Thank you for listening to The Raw Deal, everybody, and Happy New Year.
I'm Frank D for Abby Green. And for the latest in pro wrestling news, keep it locked to www.gurick.net, your source on the World Wide Web for the latest in pro wrestling news. Take it easy.